This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politrix.
Welcome to Wow What a Week, hashtag Polytrix. If a certain public protector told him she was reporting for work, he would have made it very clear that no, she isn't. And that's one of the things we like about him, that he can make things simple, or simpler, or simplest to understand. So please give a warm welcome back to Botsang Modimowame Muilwa, brother man.
Brother Fresh, the viewers, the followers, good morning. I'm not in an excellent state.
I was going to say, thank you for your commitment to the process. I know that you're feeling very COVID-y.
Hey, I hope it's not. No, I will not get COVID, yeah, but I'm here.
Yes, sir. Let's start with the embattled public protector, Busisiwe Mkhwebane.
Yes.
The other day she said, I'm going to work because the period under which I was meant to be under suspension has lapsed. And she said she's going to work.
And she did.
Yeah.
She did physically go to work, you know, like I did, and she was thrown out by a deputy. But look, Fresh, on paper,
sure,
and officially and procedurally. Mm. And I always say it's good when public office bearers or public administrators, they do what the law prescribes, because sure, then it sends the correct message to the public. We all know that politically she was not going to be allowed to enter that office, because the president who suspended her has not invited her back, pending, you know, the regulation and the decision of the committee, or in this instance of parliament. Coincidentally, sure, in the Monday we are facing, parliament is going to go on a vote for or against the recommendations of the committee. But I think it was so
the committee says she must go.
Look, the committee did not say she must go. She just exercised her, you know, labor law right to say you can be suspended, not indefinitely.
Sure.
There's time frames, and when some things happen. So those, in her words and mind, that time frame has come and gone.
Mm.
And also the process of, you know, checking her credibility or fitness to can hold office, the process has been completed, albeit that we are waiting for the National Assembly to can make a decision, and then the president. So she was saying to the president, that process is done according to your people, and the time frame as well, it cannot be indefinite. So in accordance with the regulations of the account, I'll be reporting for duty. And I think it was also a cheeky political statement to do that. But what did not become nice out of this whole process is when people questioned why Advocate Mkhwebane, the public protector, and we still pay her salary as the public protector, used the letterhead of the public protector's office to can communicate with the president. And I'm saying, in line with public administrative processes, that was correct, because he was communicating with the president, not as Advocate Busisiwe Mkhwebane, but as Advocate Busisiwe Mkhwebane, the public protector.
Sure,
so it was well within line with the law. But, you know, it got nasty, and it was unfortunate just that after we left the Women's Month, there was a squabble or a spat between the acting public protector and the public protector, and, you know, the deputy Kaleka and Mkhwebane. It was a little bit nasty. You know, I felt so bad to say these two academics, these two well-learned, respectable women are now at each other's throats due to political, you know, which one is on whose side, and all the infighting and cabals. You know, when Advocate Mkhwebane said in Zulu, on the belly, where does this one fit? Because Kaleka stood up and said, but you are not coming to the office.
Sure.
You have not been given instruction that you must come to the office. Now the question becomes, was she ever given an instruction that she must chase Mkhwebane out of the office?
Yes,
understand?
Yes,
so people must apply their minds on both sides. Has anybody ever said to the acting public protector, chase that woman out of the office, or never allow her into the office? So that's where Ungena comes in to say, where do you fit here? Where do you come in? And why do you have interest in me returning to my post? Because you did not suspend me. You didn't tell me to leave the office. But I think it was very dirty. That office of the Office of the Public Prosecutor, it's continuously being dented. And I said to somebody the other day, it is not about the incumbents.
Sure.
It's not. It is about what is happening in the country that is putting a dark cloud in that office. And it's going to take a very, very strong, very, very powerful, a strong person who has a backbone and not to be, you know, to maneuver and to play into the hands of politicians. Otherwise, we are in serious trouble.
Sure. So the African Transformation Movement, the ATM, have written to the Speaker of Parliament.
Yes, yes.
Saying that there should be a secret ballot in terms of voting for the fate, in terms of the fate of the public protector.
Indeed.
Because they're saying that if you stick to a non-secret ballot, some parties might have a position that expects the party members of parliament to toe that line. And people are not going to vote with their consciences, but are going to rather vote according to, if you don't vote, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
Does it ever work, the secret ballot? Look, if the ATM and other parties are genuine about this, you know what? I beg to question their actual conscience of MPs. Do they know who they represent there? Yes, there are deployees of political parties. Yes, obviously, if I'm a deployee of a certain political party in parliament, I will go there to push the policies of the political party that I belong to. But we are not at policy discussions or what. Sure. We are here at the national work, because this is now its work. The MPs on Monday, they will have to sit down and decide whether the public protector is fit to hold office or not. This has nothing to do with the policy of ATM or ANC or what. It's a national question. And if they had conscience, if they had ethics and integrity, why would one also want them to vote secretly? Because if you are doing your job genuinely, you think you are doing the right thing, understand, you should be able to. You know, I've seen some member of parliament, Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, in the last vote, defying the ANC position because she was thinking, I am doing this for the country as a member of parliament. The majority will not do that. I think it's a fruitless exercise, but politically, what is going, if they are granted, if the Speaker of the National Assembly grants them that option, what it will do politically, it will also demonstrate, and I wish they get it, even if I know that the ANC with the IFP and the majority and the DA, they will want, you know, Advocate Nkwemane out. But I wish the Speaker of Parliament of the National Assembly grants it, because it will demonstrate that how people inside those parties that are for the dismissal, how many of their MPs do not agree with the process. It will tell us as the public to say, okay, they are fearing for their position, but they're still having conscience. Given a chance, given an opportunity, they will apply their conscience. But I don't think they will succeed. I think the ANC and its allies, they will impeach Advocate Nkwemane come Monday, unless something between, you know, today and Monday happens and Advocate Nkwemane and the legal people come with something else. But remember, there's a challenge in the labor court regarding this matter. We'll see. You know, let's wait for next week and see how it goes. And unfortunately, you know, coincidentally, next week it will be exactly 4 weeks to her tenure in office to end. It will be exactly, it will even be less than 4 weeks, with about 2 days. It will be about 28 days for her tenure in the office to end, when they will be sitting to decide that. And let me tell our followers something. I went to check the public protector's reports. During a 7-year tenure, there were 5,000 cases that office handled. 5,000. Only 7 of the 5,000 cases she lost. Now, if we are going to apply our minds and we do the maths, only 7 out of 5,000, yes, 7 high-profile ones, because they involved business people and politicians. But if you're going to check a person's performance, that he delivered reports that were signed off, over 5,000. And for me, that's an achievement. If we look at it that way, if we remove the face and the person, that office, and I've said it before, the Office of the Public Protector in South Africa has always been doing its job. It is just not getting enough media attention for the people to know the good work they are doing. And even judges or lawyers, and none of us who have been in courts has won all the cases. I mean, it's impossible. There'll be instances where your issues will be taken on review, but their argument is that the reviews that she's been taken on, they are very naughty and silly and reckless.
In fact, I was going to say, isn't the problem not necessarily the fact that, you know, some of the cases she lost, but the fact that she allegedly lied under oath, for instance, gave a false testimony.
False testimonies, yes, yes.
And so on and so forth. Isn't that the problem, though? And is it not problematic that you'd be found wanting at that level, regardless of 5,000 that you've done a good job?
One lie in the legal process, one lie, and people who are legal eagles will tell you that if you stand in front of a judge and you lie once, everything else that we have
doesn't
said
matter.
Before will be, even if they listen to you, will be listened with caution. But have we tested that? Those are some of it. Have we tested? Have we proved that there was a lie? There was misleading information. If that was tested, if that was proved, then it's a totally different ballgame. But
sure.
I still believe, personally, I believe this whole thing was clouded not even by the Palapala investigation. From long ago, from her appointment, she was seen as belonging to one faction of the ruling party. She was not welcomed by the official opposition of the country. So that's a challenge. And the faction of the ruling party that she belongs to unfortunately lost, you know, the elective conference. And this is why I said the last time, this Chapter 9 institutions and DGs and SOEs, you know, CEOs, if the ruling party or anybody can, government can remove these people from political appointments to professionals, we will not be sitting with such situations.
Absolutely.
We will not be sitting with such situations. We should professionalize a head of, you know, Chapter 9 institutions. And it should not be politicians. I've said it the other weekend. It should not be politicians who decide who must be appointed. Because then it defeats the whole purpose that they are supposed to be the watchdogs of public monies and public processes.
Yes.
Now, I appoint you to be a watchdog that watches me on how I conduct and I perform myself. If I've given you a job, how are you going to watch me fair and squarely? And I still reserve the rights and the powers to can dismiss you.
Absolutely.
Understand? So it is an unfair situation. It's an unfair process for us as a nation, not for the public protector.
Because we lose.
We are the losers in this whole process. We don't only lose millions that they've spent on this case. We lose on the delays, the cases that should have been attended, and the face value. You know, people now will not have trust and confidence in the Office of the Public Protector.
Despite the fact that 5,000 cases were successful.
Absolutely.
There's a saying. What do they say? You can do all the good in the world. You could even find the cure for cancer. The day you sleep with a goat, you'll forever be known as the guy that slept with the goat.
Well, I've heard so.
So stay away from goats.
One mistake. I don't know why did they choose the goat.
Anyway, speaking of politics and political appointments, I don't know if this was decided in a WhatsApp group or what happened. The other day, President Ramaphosa, after the burning down of a building in Marshalltown, Johannesburg, spoke about how apartheid has robbed the country and municipalities of CFOs, of town planners.
Town planners,
I think three of his ministers have also blamed apartheid for what one could argue their shortcomings. The fact that our rail infrastructure is in the state that it's in because of apartheid, not because we decided during COVID that we're going to now cancel the contract of guys who are meant to be looking after the rail infrastructure.
Because it got worse during that time.
Exactly. So what are your thoughts? Do you think that maybe this is a position just before election time?
Fresh.
Was it decided in a WhatsApp group?
Maybe, you know the old Chappie's paper?
Yeah, did you know?
Did you know that?
Yes.
I think that's an old, outdated excuse of political parties. It's almost 30 years. And I would even argue that it's beyond 30 years because a negotiated political settlement commenced in the late 80s, early 90s. You understand? So it's over 30 years on paper and official. I will not downplay the fact that apartheid cost atrocities and bad things on black people in South Africa. That will take many years, you understand?
And even just in terms of the system.
We also did not completely uproot the evil system of apartheid. The education continued. Sure. The majority of acts of parliament and laws that are used in South African courts are from the apartheid era. So I will not undermine the damages of apartheid to black, even the thinking, I will not. However, some things are very practical, you understand? I always use the matchbox houses as an example. My parents live in a three-room house, not three-bedroom, three-room house that was built by apartheid in the 60s. And today, we extended it, we changed the way we modify it, it's still standing. If I come as the black government post-apartheid and I build low-cost housing, to provide, and I build housing that is worse than what the apartheid government, I cannot blame the apartheid government. And I go and I build these new houses in what we call locations, townships, places that were declared not habitual to live in. You still blame apartheid. But what the president and the minister, and you know, I went to inform myself after I said that. By the way, the first minister I heard who said that is my former ambassador, Lindiwe Zulu. I've worked with her. I know her capabilities. And I was sitting there, I'm like, I was, she's definitely, when I tease her, I call her, she's definitely. Said, I was, you can't be saying apartheid that at this age. Then the president comes. Then another MEC comes and says the same thing. Yes, apartheid did bad, but that building, that particular building, do you know what was in that building?
Yeah, it was a Dompas building.
Yes. Yeah. So that's a government building that we inherited. When we inherited it, was it in the same state as it is? No, it was not. We inherited it good or bad is not even the fact. The fact that it's a government building that we had a responsibility as government to maintain, to manage it, and to take care of it, and we have dismally failed. That's just one example. There's many apparently in town, over 200 of them. We have dismally failed. And we have failed not only from national government, from provincial government as well as the municipality. The politicians in the city of Joburg, they are playing Mickey Mouse games. They are playing who should be in power instead of them taking over. But that shows a lawlessness as well. People come and hijack. You know, when politicians and law enforcers say hijack buildings, so why do you know that these buildings are hijacked? The second part is, what have you done? Since you knew that they were hijacked, are we saying building hijackers are so powerful that the state, with its all law enforcement from Mazamaza, what do you call them, the green overall guys,
Mapanyaza,
and the metros and the provincial police? We have Gauteng provincial police. You know, we have seen what they call the red ants in Gauteng chasing people for occupying the so-called RDP houses illegally and throwing people out. Why are we not using these resources, the police, to control people? Yes, there's laws, but if you allow lawlessness for a certain period, you can't now want to come and apply the law. That's why courts will throw you out. That's why courts will rule in favor of lawbreakers.
Sure.
You know, because you allow them. So when you allow people to break laws, you are actually giving them an opportunity to say, no, it's okay, you can, until a wrong thing happens. You know, it has happened with Zamazamas. It's happening with illegal occupation. We have seen people and youth and young people smoking drugs. It has become normal that people are sitting in the corners of the streets of Johannesburg and they're smoking drugs. You know, I left the labor court the other day, this week on Tuesday, and I saw three young people, very young, are teenagers, on the corner of the street smoking and injecting each other. And it was normal that people were passing them. Well, I was one of the people who drove through because I was scared. What if they stick that needle to me? But where is law enforcement in this country? If we want to have a lawless country, we should continue to conduct ourselves with the way we are conducting ourselves now. This thing that has happened in Johannesburg should have not happened if the city of Joburg, from the onset, because these buildings were not hijacked even 5 or 10 years back, It started in Hillbrook many years ago.
This decay has been...
Yes.
It's 20-year-old decay.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we have lost control of the state. You understand? We have lost control of governing the country. And that's why people don't have confidence in government. Mm. That's why people will go and pay and bribe somebody who hijacks a building than to pay a municipality.
Sure.
And they charge them more. These people are complaining. So we are even paying more to the rent collectors. Imagine a person refusing to pay a municipality but is prepared to pay fresh the criminal who's collecting rent. Mm. And it shows the, you know, the moral decay and collapse of the society. But I don't think the president and the minister, sorry for them this week. Mm. We've been nice to them. They dismally failed to can respond to an unfortunate situation. To blame apartheid is not going to help the situation. What have they done since they took over power? Fortunately, it is the ANC that has been in power all along, except in the Joburg municipality, there's been changes, but they've been there. They've been in majority, and they cannot be pointing fingers. If you do me wrong, and I turn up and I take you out of my house, after 10 years, I should be able to say to my kids, when I took over, Fresh had destroyed our house. This is what I have done so far. But they don't have that. You can't be blaming apartheid that it didn't create and breed architects and town players that are black. When it takes four to six years.
But are they?
And they are there.
They are there.
They are there. I know a lot of people who are graduates in the field of town planning.
Every year there's a cohort of town planners graduating.
Absolutely. So they are not using the right resources. Mm. They are not giving our people who are graduates an opportunity. And they don't also listen. You know, like I always tell people, I've been in the public service for over 25 years. Mm. They do not listen to experts. What a politician say runs.
In fact, a friend of mine has been a town planner since 96, 97,
yeah.
Worked at the city of Jozi, and eventually left because I'm the expert here, but the comrade wants to be the one with the last word, with the final word. And she eventually left. Now she is a city planner overseas, earning dollars.
And appreciate it.
But it's a brilliant mind that should be working here.
And that's the challenge with the public service.
And has 25 years experience in planning.
Exactly.
25 years. Black, brilliant black woman had to leave.
And my problem becomes when black women, in your case, it's even a woman, she's probably one of the people that said, we are going to penetrate the market, you know, the job market that is normally for men.
Yeah.
And I'll be an architect or a town planner. And women are silent about those things. They're very quiet. We'll actually celebrate and put that lady on a newspaper to say, a South African lady is a town planner overseas. Instead of being worried, we should be worried why our experts are leaving the country and sharing their expertise and knowledge outside the country while we are trying to say this expertise are needed in the country.
Absolutely.
Why are they leaving if they are needed? Why are we not using them? Who is making decisions? You know, and I've learned this week as well that when I was in Bramfontein on Tuesday, there was an explosion just after I left.
Yeah.
I think people must not start suspecting that wherever I go, I'm the one who leaves these explosions behind me. But yeah, anyway.
Let's talk about the Lady R. The Lady R is a cargo ship that came to our shores, was seen in Simonstown. Loading or offloading, we don't know.
Stuff.
Stuff. And President Ramaphosa appointed a retired judge to look into what is going on with the Lady R. And this was also after Ambassador Brigitte of the U.S. said he can bet his life on the intel that says South Africa was arming Russia.
For the war in Ukraine.
For the war in Ukraine. The report is out that says, actually, this was an order that we placed, what was it,
2018.
That was finally being delivered.
Delivered, yes.
Although the DA are saying, we know the orders that were placed. There was not an order in 2018, but there were other orders that we can account for. Who's fooling who here? What's going on?
It's arms deal. Somebody is lying to the nation and to the world. Let's start with Ambassador Brigitte. You know, for people who also study law, they will tell you that the one who makes accusations
must prove it. Yeah.
And he hasn't so far. Mm. He just said he's put his head on the block. This is the time where he should come in and say, here's the evidence. Obviously, we'll have the deal, but he hasn't done that. The presidential investigative committee or commission report has come out. Number one, it's understandable legally why the president does not want to release that, because of the nature of the arms deal, where do you buy arms from, and the nature of arms and things like that. It's a question of national security.
Sure.
That's what politicians will do, and that is understandable.
But there's an order, can't you release the evidence of the order but just redact?
Who was the supplier and what was ordered? You could do that. I think the president should have taken the country and the international committee into confidence that, no, we had this order. Or even say, can those that we ordered from corroborate
yes.
what we are saying? So there was an order. It was a part of that order apparently came in 2019. Mm. And then it was delayed due to COVID-19 that affected the whole world. And just give the nation those logistics. Simple as that. Don't give the content of the report.
Yeah.
And these are the logistics. This was what was outstanding. But the report says when cargo came, was delivering what was the leftovers or the remaining arms. When it left, where the problem is, it was empty crates. It was empty crates that they did not want to leave there. It was already at night. They didn't want to leave there so that a normal person with a naked eye would see empty crates that carries arms lying around Simonstown. That's the nucleus of the report. So they were loading empty crates. There was nothing there. That's their findings.
But there are people now asking, but why would the ship switch off its homing beacon?
It's
tracker.
Tracker, yes.
Like, why would it switch off its tracking device if this was above board?
Well, look, let's wait for military experts. Also, I find it very odd that a naval ship will switch off its track, because that's very dangerous for the crew as well as for the country on our shores, you know. And,
sure.
And that part where it was off, it actually put doubts to the report. You know, it makes the report to be questionable.
Sure.
We know when people steal cars, when people want to do illicit things, you will switch your car tracker off if you know where it is. Once the tracker of your car is off, even the tracking company will get worried for that period. It's the same as either the black box or the tracker of a flight. If it's off for a few seconds, you know,
it's a problem.
It's a problem. Yeah. It's a serious problem. And in this instance, I don't think that committee has done justice, because they should have dug more deeper into why did the tracking device of that naval ship at some stage, and it's not even a few seconds. It's
sure.
It's just quite a long time, the way it's been mentioned. And I think for me that's the only questionable thing. But let's wait for the Americans and the DA to see. The DA says they're going to go to court to force the president to release the report openly. But just with regard to the American, I think South Africa should say, now it's an opportunity for the American president to come and bring counter evidence. If not so, they should ask him to pack and leave.
In fact, that was my next question, though. Should Ambassador Brigitte be asked to leave?
Well,
he costs the rand and our economy quite a lot.
Even relations.
And relations.
Even relations. You
and
know,
and no, perceptions.
Perceptions, yeah. So we are a country that is trading and dealing with arms illegally when there's an embargo and things like that. I think the honorable thing that the U.S. should do is to recall their president. If they don't recall, the ambassador. If they don't recall the ambassador, South Africa should take a very strong political position to say we are going to ask our friend United States to please recall the ambassador for what happens. Unless they come with a different story, which it may ruin relations, it may worsen the situation. But I think they're treating it very carefully, both countries, because it's the U.S. and South Africa here, if you look at it. Other countries are quiet and silent about it. Some has issued statements and condemned South Africa and all that, but it's us and the U.S. And I think the two countries should come with very clear political position. Did that happen or not? If it happened, I know they will get up in the backyard. I know it will not come in the forum. It doesn't work like that in the diplomatic front. These people will engage. When the president, remember I've said before, the fact that there was a presidential team that went to the U.S. to engage about this matter to try and clean up before it was in the public forum, it says to me, where there's smoke, there's fire. There is something, but I think for our sanity, for the sake of the economic trade between the two countries, this thing must be handled diplomatically and politically behind the scenes. And if both countries can come with a common statement to put this matter behind us.
Okay. Let's cross the border to Zimbabwe. They went to the polls the other day. Emmerson Mnangagwa won. And, you know, the day after it was declared that he had won, President Ramaphosa congratulated him.
Yes, yes.
There was a lot of backlash. The government of South Africa also tweeted congratulations. There was a bit of backlash about that. And then there was the inauguration.
Yes.
And swearing in for the second term for President ED. And again, there was backlash about why would President Ramaphosa go there after SADC had said these elections were anything but free and fair or proper.
Proper, yeah.
And when you look at that inauguration, I think there were only four African leaders there.
Yeah.
The other leaders might have sent someone else.
50.
They might have sent someone else.
Yeah.
But majority of African leaders didn't show up. What does that even mean?
Oh, look, clear message.
Were they busy?
Busy with what?
Is fuel expensive?
In African leaders, nothing's ever expensive. When they get an opportunity to travel, these African leaders always travel. But look, I think the message is very clear. Before actually the inauguration, something very crucial happened.
Yeah.
The opposition, Nelson Chamisa, he decided he's not going to go to court. That was the very first step on the slap of this thing.
Because it's a waste of time.
Yeah, he said it's a waste of time. The judiciary in Zimbabwe is captured. So I'm not going to waste my time to go and contest this thing. You see, that for me was telling that this guy wants peace in Zimbabwe. He's also going along the lines of the regional, you know, body, SADC, and therefore they're going to let Mnangagwa to continue with this inauguration, you know, as they've planned, that walkover. But the fact that the regional body, the SADC Observer Mission, did not rubber stamp and give green light to those elections should be telling. That's the first. The second part, the boycott of the inauguration of President Mnangagwa in Zimbabwe by almost 50 African heads of state, it's a very clear message to say we are not going to associate ourselves with wrong things that are happening in front of our eyes. Understand? And I think that's a very clear message. It should be telling and it should be embarrassing.
Is it clear enough, though?
Look, it's
loud
one step.
Enough,
it's look, fresh, an inauguration of your fellow president, and you don't show up. You don't even send your deputy. Some of them did they send ministers? Some send their ambassadors who are based in Harare, you know, to represent them. Diplomatically, that's a very bold statement. I can tell you that. But you know what? Thumbs up to countries like Botswana that they stood up against a giant named Zimbabwe over 10 years back to say, but what is happening there? If you recall, Khama was in serious trouble with President Mugabe.
I think Khama is probably one of two African leaders in the last 15 years that have stood up and said, what you're doing is wrong.
What you're doing is wrong. And they were not saying to Mugabe. They were saying to ZANU-PF and Zimbabwe, the country, what you are doing is wrong. And that's why I'm saying thumbs up to them. At that time, some of us who are lovers of the late President Mugabe would have said, Khama, you are a tiny little country, stand aside a little bit. South Africa with President Mbeki, they were playing some, you know, what they called silent diplomacy. It did not help us. What is happening in Zimbabwe now is the end results of how the SADC member states conducted themselves 15, 20 years back. It's catching up with us.
The chickens
are home to roost. How is President Mnangagwa, who's under very serious sanctions from the West, going to cope, collaborate, and work with African states that are boycotting him? And this is, for me, this is where people should look
at. Do you think he cares?
Well, he should care. If you are, he should be caring as a head of state. I would be worried if I'm in a political position with all coups happening in West Africa, and then I don't have the support, one, of the people in my country, two, of my neighbors, with the exception of South Africa.
Sure.
You know, I will worry. You are under international sanctions and embargo, but then you are also creating an environment and an atmosphere that your immediate neighbors are also not on your side, who have been on your side as a lady, a Zimbabwe, for many years, you understand? Now you have lost your last hope, because SADC has been Zimbabwe's last, you know, hope and hanging on a thread with the regional body. But they've lost that, and they've lost support of the continent. They're still under trade and economic sanctions from the West, and maybe they're still having some relations with the East, you know, Russia, China, and so on. But it's because those ones have an economic a plan of what they want to benefit out of Zimbabwe. If those economic plan of those two BRICS member states from Asia will benefit and revamp the economy in Zimbabwe for the benefit of the Zimbabweans, then it's okay for us. We will be happy to see that. But I doubt if the administration of Mnangagwa is going to do any better. I doubt. I think Zimbabweans have become like South Africans now. We have known them to be Chimurenga people, fighters, and all, but I think they've given up on this whole thing to say, let it be what they, actually their biggest worry now is to live outside Zimbabwe. They want to be anywhere else in the world besides in the Republic of Zimbabwe. And that's why we even had a High Court of Appeal case this past week in South Africa for a Zimbabwean family. You can see how desperate the Zimbabweans are. I mean, I was thinking, when I was coming to the studio this morning, that case, I was asking myself one question. Who's actually funding their legal fees? And that worried me. If people don't know what we are talking about, is the case where a Zimbabwean family went to take the government of South Africa, the Department of Home Affairs, to the High Court of the land, that their three sons who were born in South Africa must be South African citizens. And you know, I spent the whole week explaining that to people, how does it work? And a lot of people thought, where you are born, you have right to citizenship. The answer is no, you don't.
It's not automatic.
Mm. But also other people thought, when you have a birth certificate of a country where you are born, you are a citizen of that country. No, you are not. There's a difference between a birth register and a birth. To say you were born, a birth has been registered from this parent and this parent, and this is their nationalities, and a male or a female child was born of these parents, and here are the names. That's all it does. It doesn't give you citizenship. And for me, the High Court judgment didn't come as a surprise, because the immigration laws are very clear on what is a citizenship of a country. That's why in South Africa, I don't know with the new cards, but in the old Green ID book, you will see one, it used to be written citizen of South Africa. The other one will say resident. So those are small things that people never paid attention to.
Sure.
To say you are a resident of South Africa, you've got the South African ID, but you are not a citizen.
You're not a citizen, yeah.
That's why there are people who have lived here
for more than 3 years.
You're not entitled to a passport, and you're also not entitled to vote.
Sure.
So now there's a whole overhaul of the Immigration Act in South Africa. It's going to change quite a number of things. It's in the public space. It will be good if our people can familiarize themselves, because it's going to impact our personal lives, our children, our lives. One of the things that is changing there is removing men and women on the marriage register. So they're removing that now. And people are not aware. In the past, in the marriage register will say, I am hereby marrying Mr. So-and-so, a male adult, and Ms. So-and-so, a female. That's going away now, according to the new proposal, in order to do what? To accommodate the constitutional right of same-sex marriages.
Sure.
Yeah. And so those are some of the things that people should understand. And it's not automatic what we are thinking. You know, I've got a son who was born in Brazil to a Brazilian mother, and I was there, but I was there visiting and what. The child does not become South African. If I want the child to be a South African citizen, I must register that child. But South Africa must also check, do we allow dual citizenship between South Africa and Brazil? So those are some of the things we must be dealing with, to say that South Africa has a dual citizenship relationship with the country, in this case with Zimbabwe, and we don't. And that's the unfortunate part.
Let's wrap it up in KZN. Political killings since the 80s, and they still persist. What are your thoughts on KZN?
Fresh, I, you know, it's a sense that I wish I could speak Zulu clean and clear to say to my brothers and family there, we know they are warriors, we know they chase each other. Actually, you know this war in the Zululand, it goes back to the Shaka days, where brothers and sisters were fighting, Mziligaze versus Shaka, this versus Senzeka Kona, chasing each other even to foreign Matabele land, to Mozambique and Botswana land. I think this is beyond being called a political killing, because the murder rate and the assassination and the killing in the province of KZN has always been on, and it's rising. And if you look at the report that was released by the Minister of Police, it evolves around the three political parties, the ANC, the IFP, and at this moment, the NFP. There's been one or two casualties from the EFF and one from another political party, but this is too much. And the sad part about the KZN and political killings that it has now been extended to public office bearers, not political office bearers. So if somebody is like a manager or an administrator in a municipality and is being seen as an ally of a certain political party or a certain political office bearer in the sense of an MMC or a mayor, they also get killed. So even if I'm looking for a job now and there's a job of a municipal manager in any municipality in KZN, I will be afraid to take that because I'll be seen as an ally to whoever the mayor is. I think we have failed as a nation to kind of handle the situation in KZN, and we didn't leap it when it was still early. But I also have a concern that green, good work. There's been a task team, a police special force that has been established to deal with this political killing. It's okay to have it. It's good to have it because it really needs special attention.
Sure.
It's the same as the drugs in the Western Cape. You know, it's the same as Zamazamas in Gauteng. Those are serious problems. But my only concern is, and I'm not a police force or law enforcement expert, but my only concern is this thing is being carried. And the person who's running away with it, actually running for, is the Minister of Police, not the Commissioner of Police. That is very, very highly irregular. That the Minister of Police is running with a special force created to resolve political violence. Why not the Commissioner of Police? Whether it's a National Commissioner of Police or the provincial one, but it is irregular. I can tell you by the book. On the book, it's irregular that a political office bearer is dealing with this administrative and command issue. He's a political bearer, he's not a commander.
Sure.
And that's why I say, I think Minister Bekicele, either his principals or himself have failed to differentiate from the time he was a police commissioner. What he's doing now is doing the work of a police commissioner, which I've always said he did it very well, exceptionally well. It suited him. But he's a political office bearer. He should step aside and let Masemola and other lieutenants of the police force, you know, they call them the top brass of the police, to lead this whole thing with the people on the ground. I really, you want to ask me what's going to happen there? I don't know, because these people are killing each other.
Because you're saying it could have been nipped in the bud years ago. But nipped in the bud how?
Fresh, and political tolerance is very important. What is happening is political tolerance. And it's like when people change political parties and move in between or form the NFP, or NPF, it's a new political party that broke away from there. So you could see that this killing, because you are leaving my political party, I'll deal with you. You understand? Political tolerance from political parties educating their members. But also, these imbeciles that we always had, political imbeciles, try and bring back the moral fiber of the society to say to the people, we are brothers, you are sisters, you are neighbors. Yeah, occupying a political position does not mean you become an enemy of your neighbor. That's just one element I'm proposing. The second element is, I think, measures like this special force should have been implemented long ago. And also, the prosecution of those who are being called inkabis or assassins and all that, the prosecution levels are very low. And as them being captured and successfully prosecuted are very low. So we should beef up those elements. And if it goes to a push, I'm one of the people who have been saying, if it goes to a push, if there's a war in this country, we have an army. It doesn't have to be a war from outside us being attacked. We have an army that are sitting in barracks, well-armed, well-equipped. We just learned that we just bought arms from United Arab Emirates. Let the army be deployed to those areas of KZN to save the lives of the citizens of this country. And we are not doing that. We are not doing that. I mean, I don't want MMCs or MECs to be walking around with bodyguards, with rifles. We won't afford that. We want a strained budget and strained resources. But we have a situation. And we have to come with measures. I've tabled three things here that says this should be done, this should be done, this should be done. It's education, it's law enforcement, it's the right people handling that. But if it goes to a push, Bashar law. You bring the army to the situation. So we are not doing any of those things. And I also think one thing that I've learned from the police, and that's when in my work we're dealing with corruption and border posts. One of the things they should do, you rotate people, it works. People who are in law enforcement, you rotate people. You can't keep the police in KZN who have been said they are involved into this mess, and you make them to go and resolve them. Rotate them, take the KZN police, throw them in the Northern Cape where there's no war. You understand? And you take the ones from another province, Limpopo, Gauteng, you take them to KZN. I'm just using them as an example. Rotate the police. You can't take the problem solvers within the community that creates problems because they are contaminated, they are involved, or they are also naturally affected as human beings about what is happening. They may have lost family members, they may be involved in these killings, or may have lost some of friends and colleagues through these killings. It's a simple, basic move of bring fresh minds.
Sure.
You know, think outside the box, bring fresh minds.
But how much of the killings are linked to access to projects and tenders and eating?
When you look at the police report, you will see that most of these killings, one, I've noticed that it comes because of political differences and intolerances. When one part in Qatar is growing again in KZN, and that's one, there's a link. But I will not put a blind eye on the fact that these are linked to contracts and tenders and money. And you will see, and this, actually you're very observant, one of the things I picked up is that these killings happen at municipalities that they just change hands, and there's big projects coming in those municipalities. You are absolutely correct. A municipality that has just changed hands. They were by elections, then there's new administration, then there's projects going on, then the shooting and the killing starts. You can see it's all about money, it's all about power, it's all about contracts and tenders. So I don't know.
So how do we fix that?
Again, if you put processes into place, we know that people are killing each other for money. You stop these projects. You suspend. Anyway, the government has said they're suspending spending of government. We know that it's going to affect service delivery, but it's already affecting service delivery when those who are supposed to do jobs are being killed or are afraid to can perform their duties. It's already affecting service delivery. And you know, at some stage when you are in a battlefield, and now I'm not talking like a political analyst, I'm talking like a soldier, you must take a step back and assess the situation. Hold your horses. Assess the situation. Come with a strategy and a plan. Even if you had a plan initially, your plan is not working. It's being disturbed by political intolerances and assassinations. You hold back. You put a hold on all these tenders and these processes. And you analyze the situation. You check what needs to be done. And look, maybe the government should give me a job to can gather a number of people to go, and I will resolve the KZN by remote. I will not go there. I'm brave, but I will not want to play in that battlefield. But really, I think it needs a national interest.
Sure.
Not only the police, everybody, including COCTA, because this is not just a police issue. You know, the Treasury, COCTA, it needs a very serious intelligence on the ground. You know, this is where our national intelligence, the domestic leg of our national intelligence must come in and have people, field marshals, who will be able to identify potential targets and potential assassins. That's how you do this whole thing.
Sure.
But it's clear that the government has not been doing that. We did not use our domestic leg or branch of intelligence friends to can deal with the situation in KZN. One of my friends, who's a high-ranking journalist who has been following this story for many years and has written a lot about it, he says, Butang, intelligence has done its job. The problem is the intelligence report goes to the people who are corrupt, who have been there, who are actually mentioned in some of these skirmishes. And that's where the problem is. You are a police brigadier in a region. You are being mentioned to say you are involved or you are related to the assassins. And when a report comes mentioning you, they still keep you there. I don't say they should suspend people illegally. No. But they should move you because your name is being mentioned or contaminated. So I think those are some, but I don't know whether politicians don't have the guts to can take bold political decisions. But again, police officers are not supposed to be friends with politicians. And that's where the problem is, that political office bearers are friends with police because of the benefits, because of the security, because of covering their corrupt acts. You understand? So they contaminate everybody. Everybody gets contaminated into this whole corruption process of the country. But basically, it's corruption that's destroying this country. It's nothing else. It's not to say we hate each other. We love each other. So again, it is corruption that has become the root evil of us hating each other and destroying each other. And that's the cause of the problem.
And I think on that note, you can drop the mic.
And I wish the producers will fire me from this too if I drop this mic, but thank you very much, Fresh.
Butang, thank you as always for your insight, for your analysis. And we do it again in a week.
Thanks, my brother.
Where do we find you on social media?
First, let me apologize for my voice today. If I don't sound as good as I always be, I'm not well, guys. I nearly dropped the mic before I came to the studio. But also for the technical hiccup we had last week, we got a lot of lashing and complaints, and people say it was a show with most important information and we dropped the ball. But it happens. We're all human beings. This happens. But on social media, I'm still at botsangm@gmail.com. or 082-485-9100 to order the books or to make bookings for public speaking. And then on social media handles, it's @BotsangM for all social media handles. Thank you very much, Flash.
And on that note, Botsang is about to leave the building. We're coming to you live from AMP Studios, downtown Johannesburg. Shout out to the Africa Podcast Network for creating a home for a whole bunch of us. Pezulu Works, your incredible cinematography. Shout out to Trevor and the crew. All of our imaging, courtesy of artist The Flow Fraser, and our guest, Botsang Muilwa. Creative director, Kuvesh Mohan, and show producer, Keletso Mudisa King. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Until next week, have a great week in spite of yourselves.